The Warriors podcast continues here at Chase Center as we welcome some very special guests from the Harlem Globetrotters set for two games at Chase Center on this coming Saturday night, that being January the 11th, and Saturday afternoon, two games, one at 2 p.m., one at 7 p.m., and you know, we're doing something a little bit different here because this podcast is always about the Warriors and players and folks from in and around the organization. And in this case, there's such a great story about one particular Harlem Globetrotter who's a huge Warriors fan, that being Scooter Christensen, and another guy, Zeus McClurkin, who played at North Carolina A&T, where Warriors legend Al Addles played his college ball. We will get into all of this, but first, really, the fandom for the Warriors, Scooter. It starts when and where in your life?
Well, it really just started. Let's just say I'm a basketball fan, and I've always just gravitated towards basketball. But with the Run TMC, you know, I was watching that back in the day. You know, the killer crossover with Tim Hardaway, and one of my friends, Ant Atkinson, at the time, showed me Steph Curry, his game at Davidson, and his game was so much like Steve Nash, was one of my favorite players, and I thought they had like the same type of similar game, so I gravitated towards him, and he just has that it thing about him, man. He's so approachable, such a likable guy. I call him the humble warrior.
It's amazing how all these things come together, because now Steve Nash is one of the Warriors' coaches, a player development coach, and he's here often working with the guys and like teaching a legacy of how the game is played. And we turn to the concept of, you played college ball at North Carolina A&T, Zeus, and this is an amazing story. You're there, and as I understand it, you're wearing a boot, and you go up and dunk and really catch the coach's attention for how athletic and how great you are on the court.
Yeah, so I was planning on playing basketball in a Division I college, but growing up, I wasn't very good in basketball. So I had to settle for a D2 walk-on position at a small school. And then I was sitting the bench, so I wasn't very happy, Lawrence. And then I said, you know what, if I'm going to sit the bench, it's going to be somewhere I really want to be. So I gave it my best shot. And that summer, I broke my foot. And it was the summer I was headed over to North Carolina A&T. And the coach, he was there, had never heard of me before, didn't know anything about me. So I said, they're going to know something about me. While they were in practice one day, I walked by in my boot and I dunked the ball. And he said, you know what? If you want to be a part of this team, you got to work your way up. So I started off as a manager. You know, I'm the guy washing the clothes, setting them out and everything, all the way up to my senior year becoming a starter and finally earning my own scholarship. It was an amazing opportunity. And if you would have told me that that would have led to where I am today, I would have thought you were crazy.
Well, you know, the thing that's so cool about that kind of story, and I remember one that's very similar with Festus Ezeli, who had come over to the United States from Nigeria and had not only played in high school, and he was at the junior college that he was at in Sacramento, and the coach noticed him and was like, why are you doing the film cut-ups? You're 7 foot. And then Festus had such a great mark on that Warriors championship team and really being a part of things here. And, I mean, we love that sort of thing. Now, when you talk about North Carolina A&T and Al Addles, Warriors legend, I mean, the epitome of class, Hall of Famer, his number is raised in the rafters at North Carolina A&T, and the mark that he made there, how has that felt on campus? You know, it was a while ago, because he graduated like right before he joined the Warriors in 1960, so in the late 50s he was playing at North Carolina A&T, but there are still some notes of that there.
Absolutely. And, you know, seeing that name up there in the rafters, it gave all the players something to shoot for, because there weren't a lot of players who have been retired at North Carolina A&T. So, you know, I remember being a younger player, seeing that name up there and just hoping that one day I could do the same thing. And I'm hopefully on that same track right now.
Wait, one more North Carolina A&T story, and I love this one. Toward the end of what was your senior season there, you're like, I'm going to make ESPN top 10 tonight. I'm doing it. And then you do. How did that go down?
So, yeah, it was my senior year, our last game on ESPN. And I told everybody in the locker room, I said, guys, I'm getting on top 10 plays tonight. I'm either getting dunked on or I'm dunking on somebody, but I am getting on top 10 plays. Blessedly, it was the former, and I was able to actually dunk on somebody. It was great. My first appearance on SportsCenter. Now with the Harlem Globetrotters, I've had multiple opportunities to get on SportsCenter again, whether it was spinning the basketball with Steph Curry, or shooting basketball with Steph Curry, going through the three-man weave. or going down the Mall of America zip line shooting a trick shot, giving those opportunities to me now. It all started down there at North Carolina A&T, and I'm super honored to be here.
Yeah. You know, when you think of what the Globetrotters have represented from the very beginning, and, you know, this is something we should really stop and talk about for a little bit. This is a team that began in the time where the United States was in the Great Depression, essentially, and it was like 1926, in the mid to late 20s, when Abe Saperstein started the team in Chicago. And there was the coolest idea that it was a ballroom in Chicago, the Savoy Ballroom, and they were the Savoy Five. And on the middle of this court, Cab Calloway would come out at halftime and hidey, 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 hi, do like a halftime piano performance. And they're in this unbelievable setting, and then barnstorming starts. And what that means when you think about that time period means sometimes sleeping in a car because there were not accommodations for the players. When you think now as active players for what the legacy of the Globetrotters is and has been and how you carry on that legacy, what comes to mind and how much do you guys think about that past, Scooter?
I mean, those guys paved the way for us to do what we do today. I mean, we couldn't do what we do because those guys had to sleep in cars. They went around barnstorming, playing anybody for money, you know? And when you hear that, I mean, Curly Neal told me a story one time where they played for an all-black crowd at one point and then played for an all-white crowd. And he said, I think we had a lot to do with the races joining together because the white and the black can sit down together, look at the game and laugh and look at each other. Man, maybe we're not so different, you know? So when he told me that, yeah, think about that, like, mind-blowing story. So to know that and to carry the tradition what we do now, I mean, we can go anywhere in the world. We're always the home team, and we always get that message across of bringing families together and making memories last a long time.
You know, it's so well said, and you also think about how there was a time period where the NBA needed the Globetrotters to come and be on doubleheader bills to bring people there to see the games. And it really was such a cultural force in that way, Zeus.
Yeah, we were like the opening act for the NBA games. And people would actually, after our game was over, they would leave. But, you know, a big reason why the NBA is integrated today in the game of basketball has been spread over the world is because of the Harlem Globetrotters. I mean, in 1948, we played the world champion Minneapolis Lakers. And we ended up defeating them by 1 point. Everybody thought it was a fluke, an accident, so they put the same game on the next year, and the Globetrotters won by an even larger margin. And that actually led to the first African-American to be signed to an NBA contract in 1950. His name was Nat Sweetwater Clifton, former Harlem Globetrotter. So you can say that we broke the color barrier in the game of basketball. And also we've broken the gender barrier in the game of basketball as well, because in 1985, Lynette Woodard was the first female Globetrotter. She was the first female to play with the all-male pro team. And these are the barriers that we've been breaking and the limits that we've been pushing since 1926.
And the style of play also became conducive to innovating because it was so based in making it entertaining, but like long shots, which you would now look at, like, that's a Steph Curry 3-point shot, was a kind of shot, or also, you know, dunking, really. But just how has the past informed the way that the Globetrotters play the game now, Scooter?
I mean, it's unbelievable because you'll see it, you'll see Shaq and Kenny Smith, and they'll see something Globetrotter-like on a highlight, and they'll start singing the Sweet Georgia Brown song. And it's like, man, you know, like, that's coming from years of tradition and just hard work and the things. I mean, we integrated the alley-oop, the three-man weave, the fancy passing, everything that you see the guys do today all reverse back to the Globetrotters, and you can't beat that.
No, that is one of the things that I remember from my own childhood was that Meadowlark Lemon, as a sports figure, was as big as any NBA star is today. And I'm not just saying that. I mean, there have been massive stars who've played for the Globetrotters. I mean, you think Wilt Chamberlain. But you also remember there's this time period where the Globetrotters were on television so much. And you know, I had an honor once to work with Eric, who runs the communications for the Globetrotters, and do a spot at NBC where I used to work with Curly Neal. And it was like really exciting because, I mean, he was in, you know, Scooby-Doo cartoons and stuff that you watched as a kid. When did you guys catch on to noting the Globetrotters in your basketball world? Like, when would that have been in your childhood?
Mine was when I never been to a game as a kid. But I always watched the Scooby-Doo cartoon, which I saw them on. But I'll tell you a quick story. I remember doing the 2009 NBA All-Star Weekend Celebrity Game, and I'm in there with Curly Neal, and Magic Johnson is in the room. So we go in and see Magic Johnson. All of a sudden, Magic Johnson gets on his knees and starts bowing to Curly Neal. I'm looking at Magic Johnson like, "Oh, that's my dad's favorite player." And I'm like, "Oh, Magic. No, every highlight, every interview. All of a sudden, he's on his knees bowing to Curly. I'm like, "Hold on, I hang out with Curly every day. Hold on, let me think of something here." Unbelievable.
And Zeus, your time coming to the world of the Globetrotters after leaving North Carolina A&T put you on the team that's sort of the infamous team that has played the Globetrotters quite a bit, and not so successfully, the Washington Generals.
Yeah, so we're bringing up the past, that's what we're doing here? Okay. So yeah, my introduction to the Harlem Globetrotters was playing against them for the Washington Generals. I had never heard of this team before. I never really heard of the Globetrotters either growing up. I mean, I saw them on cartoons, but I thought it was, you know, fictional characters. It was only later on in life when I actually put on that green jersey, and I looked across from me, and I saw what these guys were doing. These guys and girls, they were having the time of their life. They were doing the very thing that I would always get criticized for when I played basketball. People told me I smiled too much and all I ever wanted to do is dunk. And today, I get paid to smile and dunk. So, you know, I tell kids, you know, stay a nice person if you're a nice person. Don't let people try to change you in the game of basketball. You don't have to have that killer instinct and demonstrative demeanor to be successful in your sport. But what I noticed with the Globetrotters was everywhere they went, they were the hometown team, and I wanted to be a part of that. So I did everything I could that first year as a Washington General to be seen by them, and eventually they got tired of me dunking on them, and they signed me over to a contract.
So now we move forward with not just what the past was, but what the game is when somebody comes to see it and how magical it can be. And there's a lot of influences right now via social media to have amazing trick shots. And you guys pull them off. There was one thing where, you know, in the lead up to this game, you did the tunnel shot, Zeus. It was a video with Eric Paschal doing, the video with you guys. And the first time I walked out and I looked at the angle at which the new tunnel is here at Chase Center was different than the angle it was at Oracle Arena that Stefan used to do the, you know, tunnel shot in the pregame from. I looked at the new angle and I'm like, that's not possible. But not only did you hit the shot, you did it behind your back. Like, these are the things that, like, are really impressive when you see it come together. But when you think of where the game is evolving, where the aspect of entertainment in that dude perfect world has taken this, and even talk about that scene in New York City where you guys were in a very new building down, I guess, yeah, the Vessel, and it's like many stairs down, a beautiful architecturally designed building, but then you're hitting baskets from like 12 stories up. I mean, this is where the entertainment value is now. How have you guys been able to pull that together?
Oh, man, it's been 94 years of maturation. You know, it's a process, and this year we're taking that process to the next level. It's called our Pushing the Limits World Tour for a reason, because we're really pushing the boundaries. This year is actually our 10-year anniversary of the four-point line, which we invented, and that's 30 feet away from the basket, but we're pushing it back to 35 feet away from the basket. In fact, we actually introduced the four-point line to Clay and Steph. We showed them how far away it was, you know, and I remember rolling out that tape and showing it to Clay Thompson. He was like, "Wow, that's it." And he pulls the shot up and just sinks it. Like those guys are already hitting it from that area. Also, some other things that are going on in our game this year, you guys will see a glow-in-the-dark basketball. We're actually doing our magic circle in the dark in many of the arenas we're playing in. And we're also going to attempt a world record live at the games. So you're going to see us actually try to attempt one of those records and hopefully make it.
And you're talking about this being around the world. Mm-hmm. The globalization of basketball is very key. The Warriors have played in China twice in the NBA Global Games, going to Beijing and Shanghai and once to Shenzhen. The inclusion of Lucky on this Globetrotters team now and his ball handling. I mean, they showed this video with Eric Paschal, and I'm just going like, that almost defies logic. He has like a matrix move too with the ball spinning.
He does. He's absolutely sensational with that basketball. And for him to join our squad, our organization, just means the world to us. And, you know, some of the things that Lucky does, actually, his story was that he actually saw the Globetrotters when he was in China, and he saw myself and another teammate of mine do a couple of ball tricks, which inspired him to do to be where he's at today. So, I mean, bow down to Lucky. He's tough.
Guys, in closing, any other thoughts for where this goes? Because we've innovated so much in just the sport of basketball, and then the aspect of what the Globetrotters have done to keep pushing the envelope. Where could it continue to go? If you could just dream a bit about what could possibly be next, because sharing it with global audiences is obviously the frontier for all of us in this world of sport. But sharing that love and that joy and kind of bring it all back to where it began, it's going somewhere. Where do you envision that?
You know, I can't tell you exactly where it's going, but I can tell you that it's going to go. The Globetrotters have been around for the last 94 years for a big reason, that the reason being that people never forget the way that you make them feel. So when we walk into an arena, when we walk into a city and people see this red, white, and blue basketball or our jerseys, it takes them back to that happier time when they went to a game with their parents and with their grandparents. And for that reason, this tradition will continue to go on forever. And we're going to keep wowing you guys and do our best to continue to keep those smiles on your faces.
That is Zeus McClurkin with Scooter Christensen. Thank you so much for checking out a very special edition of the Warriors Podcast.